If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you can even bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. Or if you're the kind of person that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year to do it. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to activate this offer. Again, they will double your first deposit with promo code BLUEWIRE. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. What it do, Hardwood Knox listeners? I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times, awesome, fantabulous, spectacularyo. Cannot wait to get into some favorite lineups for each team, beginning with the Western Conference co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started today, I just want to continue reminding, imploring, begging, pleading with everyone to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. It doesn't take that long out of your day. We know there are those of you out there that haven't done it just based off our listening statistics. If you've already subscribed, great, but please throw us a rating, write a review. We love checking those things out. It takes 10 to 15 seconds out of your day, maybe a little bit longer if you write a review, and we'll be indebted to you forever. You can also find us wherever else you're getting your podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Art19, all those good places. But iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you are out there and that you are listening. So please head over there and rate, review, subscribe, as I say ad nauseum every episode. Follow Hardwood Knox on Twitter as well, at Hardwood Knox. You can also and should follow Andy on Twitter, at Andrew D. Bailey, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can follow me on Twitter, at Dan Favalli. That's F-A-V-A-L-E. Finally, be sure to follow Blue Wire on Twitter so you can check out all of our other great podcasts, as well as some of my other obviously amazing tweets that come from there, at Blue Wire Pods. That's at Blue Wire Pods. Andy, how are you doing?
I am great. Ready to dive into some intriguing lineups. One of my favorite topics, regardless of the time of the year.
Yeah, same here. Before we do that, we're going to do the quick debut of the segment that we had discussed, Swole or Troll, just to get people feel for it. And the thinking here is not just it rhymes, but also Swole would be a flex that adds actual substance or is a genuine take or is just something that we can believe. And then Troll will end up being they're just doing it, you know, for the clicks, just for fun, just for shits and giggles. They're trying to spur just pointless debate. So swole is basically genuine. It's also a very cool word. It's a flex, and troll is going to be the latter we got described. I have three inaugural topics for us to cover. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
So on ESPN's The Jump, I believe Ramona Shelburne and Nick Friedell were talking about how the Warriors are a legitimate threat to get Giannis Antetokounmpo. They weren't really specific about how they get him, but Giannis is slated for free agency in 2021. He is a super max extension eligible next summer, and the Bucks will certainly offer him one. For the Warriors specifically, something to keep in mind is that if Giannis does reach free agency, the salary cap that summer is $125 million. They have almost $108 million committed to Klay, Dre, and Stephen Curry alone for that season. That's not including D'Angelo Russell or other players on the roster. Giannis's max salary on the open market, not in a supermax extension, but on the open market, would be $37.5 million. So the math doesn't quite check out. Even if you get rid of Draymond Green and everyone else except for Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, you actually fall short of Giannis's max when you factor in other cap holds. Is that Giannis to Golden State scenario, be it a trade, they're somehow getting cap space, Is it Swole or Troll, Andy?
I know they just pulled this off, kind of, with Kevin Durant. I don't know. However long that rumor existed before he actually went to the Warriors, there was a lot of people that were like, no, this is impossible. And then they pulled it off. So there's some precedent for this, but I'm going to say Troll. This seems like just drumming up the story well ahead of his free agency with little practicality to it. Nothing's impossible in the NBA at this point. After what we saw this summer, I wouldn't rule out any form of player movement, but this one would shock me.
I'm there too, just because it's so far in advance, and it's almost just like that the tweet meme, whatever it's called now, or the format where it's like nobody, and then
yeah,
the Giannis rumors, just
yeah,
in a Warriors jersey. The other ones I have for you, this got quite some attention yesterday, is that Tillman Fertitta, who
oh my gosh,
on his book tour, the book tour that keeps on giving, has been doing a lot of media, so he's on First Take at ESPN, and he says James Harden was the best post defender in the league last year. Just look at the statistics. When he wants to play defense, there is nobody any better. Swole or Troll?
Troll. I suppose there's some truth to if when he wants to play defense, he's pretty good at it. Upgrading that to nobody better is a very, very bold move. I too am in love with the Tillman Fertitta book tour. Let's have this guy update the text, write a new book, whatever it takes, every year or so, so we can get more content like this in the dog days of NBA summer.
Is it possible to be in between Swole or Troll? Because I don't know if I have to go with Troll. There's no way he absolutely believes that. Even there are, you can get to stats that say James Harden was the most effective post defender in the NBA, but that's not necessarily something you, one, want to say about a should-be wing defender. Two, he's defending under 3 post-ups per game.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, like, how often does that even happen?
So there's, you know, those things build up, but that's not a ton. And teams are still targeting him in the post, and he's able to switch on to easier assignments, at least so far in the Rockets scheme. That's just the ending is what
yeah,
gets me. When he tries, he can be, there's nobody better on defense. Let's just, you know.
There's also the possibility, like, I don't know too much about Tillman Fertitta, and maybe somebody in the analytics department just shared like one number with him and he truly believes that. That also like wouldn't shock me.
The last one, and this one is my favorite. Patty Mills posted a photo of himself on from Team Australia from the World Cup, and he is if no one has seen this picture, he has got a serious pump. It's like better than when Captain America went through the body transformation machine after getting the serum. You saw the picture, I know you did, because I you saw it beforehand, but I sent it to you, and I was just in awe of Patty Mills' physique. Swole or Troll? It's literally just Swole, right?
Like, yeah.
Actual, literally Swole.
Yeah, Patty Mills is quite Swole. I think that picture came at the end of the Team USA game when they beat Team USA in an exhibition.
Better. It's the ultimate flex.
Yeah. So, and then you sent me the picture of him from like 4 or 5 years ago or whatever it was. I wonder if he was like,
he looked like skinny Raymond Felton.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah. I didn't think about that. I was thinking he might've been juicing before the game, but I don't want to throw that out there, even though I just did.
Yeah. Don't throw that out there. Patty Mills, he's all natural. We're just coming out and saying that now.
That's my troll, is that he was juicing before the game.
Actually, one really quick one. Stephen Curry wearing a box and one shirt. Swole or Troll?
Oh my gosh, I didn't see that. Amazing.
He was wearing, it's a box, and then the plus sign and the number one, and then it says respect the game under it. Now here, I don't want to get too serious about this, but hey, it is September. Is he insulting his own team? Because it's like, the Raptors went to that because out of one, respect for what Stephen Curry could do, and then two, because of the personnel around him on the floor, they felt that they could go to that defensive scheme. So I don't understand who he's dunking on.
I guess we'd have to ask whatever company manufactured the shirt.
It had to be Under Armour, right? Like, I didn't even look, but it had to be Under Armour, no?
Oh, yeah, that's true. It would have to be Under Armour. But I guess I would interpret it as respect my game. I'm so good that I demanded a box in one.
Then the shirt's just wrong. And so he trolled himself and the Warriors. That's my troll. He's trolling himself and the Warriors.
I'm taking Swole. I like it.
I just don't. How is it insulting anybody else?
I don't know if it's insulting anybody. It's just saying I'm good enough to demand a box in one.
Yeah, but the respect the game thing rubs me a weird way because it's almost like you're saying don't go to that.
I think he's saying respect my game.
Well, this will be the disagreement that severs the Hardwood Knox ties forever. Hopefully this will be a weekly segment and we'll get better at it, and Andy will have to bump it because he has a zillion Twitter followers, be soliciting your candidates for Swole or Troll segments. I don't know if it'll be episodic or if we'll do it once a week, but Andy and I are trying to spice up the pod, and that was actually enjoyable. But lots to get to with these lineups. We will not be spending a ton of time on each of them. The way that we selected these, it's not necessarily lineups that we expect to get a ton of time, but at least for me, I didn't.
Or maybe even any time in some cases.
Right, but I didn't pick completely what I thought were irrational ones where I knew that they just wouldn't go to them. I was trying to come up with semi-realistic combinations that there was a path to seeing, but I think there are more than a few instances for each of us where these lineups probably won't see the light of day.
Yeah, I think that's true. And maybe another way to phrase it for me is, like, if I was the coach, these are lineups that we would definitely see.
That's a perfect way.
Yeah, even if they're pretty unlikely with the coach of whatever team we're talking about. Although some of them I think are going to happen. But like you said, some of them are also kind of out there.
Yeah, just wait till we get to we're doing Western Conference today. Excuse me. Wait until we get to the Eastern Conference pod. There's some rough stuff there when we get to the Magic and the Wizards.
I have a couple in the East that are pretty wild. I actually have a name coming up in the Western Conference podcast that might throw some people too, but we'll see.
I'm ready for this. You want to go reverse alphabetical order or regular alphabetical?
Ooh, let's do reverse. We don't do that a lot, do we?
Who cares? I like it. Solid choice. There are countless ways to keep up on what's happening in the world of sports, but how are you supposed to read every great article? How are you supposed to watch every awesome highlight without losing time in your busy day? Scrolling through every app and visiting every website on a daily basis is impossible. Now coming to the stage, Axios Sports. Axios Sports is a modern sports page delivered directly to your email inbox. Each morning, you'll see the best stories from around the sports world, from the NBA and the NFL to niche sports like cricket and ping pong. The email newsletter highlights the most important stats and trends, giving you the ability to stay informed. It's super simple to sign up. Just go to sportsaxios.com. That's sports.axios.com. Axios Sports is clean, crisp, and gives you everything you need to know. Read it in 5 minutes in the elevator, or discover a deep dive article while you're on the train to work. Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the cool person sharing an amazing link with your friends and coworkers. Join the 100,000 sports fans who get caught up on the day before it even begins. And best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, nothing. This is free, curated sports content delivered directly to you. Do yourself and your time a favor. Sign up for Axios Sports Newsletter for free at sports.axios.com. Seriously, I subscribe to it, and it makes me feel more informed without spending time clicking through websites, apps, and social media platforms ad nauseum. So again, try it for free at sportsaxios.com. Andy, what if you were a coach of the Utah Jazz? What is your going to be your favorite lineup, or the lineup that you would be most intrigued to see on the floor?
Okay, people who follow me know that I follow the Jazz pretty closely, so I could have gone any number.
Excuse me?
I could have gone so many different ways on this. And one thing about the Jazz is they've got a lot of, like, multi-positional players right now, so there's a bunch of different combinations we could use. But I want to see Mitchell and Gobert at the 1 and the 5, and then 3 wings alongside them. And these ones... This is more of a bench mob, even though there's 3 starters in there. Donovan Mitchell at the 1, Dante Exum at the 2, Joe Ingles at the 3, Royce O'Neal at the 4, Rudy Gobert at the 5. I just want to see Mitchell with a bunch of non-scorers. this season. I actually think this is going to happen. It's either going to be him or Bogdanovich as sort of the guy who carries the second unit scoring load. And I think either one of them is going to be able to go nuts on some backup units this season. So with this lineup, you got Mitchell at the one, kind of controlling everything. You've got three really good perimeter defenders in Exum, Ingles, and O'Neal. And then, in my opinion, you have the best interior defender in Gobert. So it's just like they're going to be locking everybody down. And then on the other end, it's going to be Mitchell. And hopefully O'Neal's three-point percentage carries over because you can have a couple floor spacers there. And then everybody knows I'm the mayor of Exum Island, so I had to sneak him on there too.
Isn't Mitchell plus a bunch of non-scorers kind of the reason that the Jazz peaked
in
the last two seasons?
So there was definitely some concerns with that last year. But that happened a lot of times against starters for Donovan Mitchell. I think it's going to be either him or Bogdanovich. I think gets a chunk of minutes against backups. And I think against reserves, it should be more successful for him.
The lineup that I picked was more traditional as far as these selections have gone. I want to see Conley and Mitchell in the backcourt with Ingles, O'Neal, and Gobert in the frontcourt. It's could end up
potential starting lineup right there.
Right. I don't think they're going to bring Bogdanovich off the bench just because they paid him a ton of money. I would think. Yeah. I think it would be Ingles or O'Neal that comes off. But I'm a proponent of O'Neal at the four. I'm going to say, though, that what I would also like to see, if we're talking about maybe playing second units or against certain matchups, is pull Gobert from that lineup and put Jeff Green at the five.
I want Jeff Green at the 5 minutes, too.
That's something that I want to see. He was fairly effective there for Washington last year, and Utah has just better defenders to put around him and probably better shooters when you look at their personnel.
Washington's net rating with Green at the five last year was actually like 90th percentile.
I don't think it was a huge sample size, but I remember it being up there.
It wasn't huge, but it was like 20% of his minutes. So it was a decent amount, and he played a little bit at the five for Cleveland too, and had a plus net rating there. So it's going to be hard for them to get Jeff Green minutes at the five because Gobert obviously is going to play his 30 plus, and then Ed Davis is the backup.
Right.
But I hope they can find some way to do it because that is very intriguing to
Maybe
me.
Maybe that's like a just breakout in the postseason thing. Depending on what team they end up facing in the playoffs.
Yeah, it could be.
San Antonio Spurs, who you got?
Okay, I've got my first two are both pretty weird. I've got DeJounte Murray at the one, Patty Mills at the two, Derek White at the three, Rudy Gay at the four, and then this is the real topper. Trey Lyles at the five.
Ooh.
This feels like a pretty modern lineup to me. Derek White at the three is obviously a small ball move. Rudy Gay is pretty much exclusively a four at this point, but I think he's – is there a chance that Rudy Gay is now like slightly underrated? He's been pretty good for the Spurs.
When he played the four last year, their defense, I believe, was in the 90th percentile, and their rebounding was up there as well. The lineups with him at power forward last year in San Antonio were uber effective.
Yeah, he's been really good in that role. He was a guy that I actually was like really curious to see if Utah would take a run at before it became clear he was going to re-sign with the Spurs. And then Lyles obviously had a very down year in Denver last season, but there's still signs of hope for him from the first 4 years of his career. I don't think this is something that you can get away with for long stretches because I think your defense would be pretty rough with Trey Lyles at the five. But you do have some solid defenders in there, and Murray, White, you mentioned that their defense was pretty good with Rudy Gay on the floor last season. This is just a more modern feel to me than what we've seen from San Antonio really ever.
Yeah, and they were closer to the 80th percentile in defense with Rudy Gay at the four last year. Mine are going to end up being more traditional than yours, which is – that's fantastic. I have Murray, Derek White, Damari Carroll, Rudy Gay, and LaMarcus Aldridge. My thought was – put what could end up being a four even to plus defensive players at their position around LaMarcus Aldridge and make it more of a smaller lineup too, where you're going to have Gay or Carroll be your de facto four. The concern there would be, are you going to get enough creation and playmaking out of Murray and Derek White? But that's part of the reason I did it, is I know Derek White didn't thrive in that on ball role with Team USA, but if you can't trust his jumper, the ball's going to need to be in his hands anyway. And so by not having DeMar DeRozan on the floor, even Patty Mills to some extent, although he can play extremely well off the ball. It gives him just more of a path to monopolize some of the possessions.
I can see that.
That brings us on to, that's probably a lineup we actually see. I like that you're thinking more outside the box than I am. I'm interested to see now your Sacramento Kings one.
My next one is pretty, this one won't be surprising. I have De'Aaron Fox at the one, Buddy Hield at the two, Bogdan Bogdanovic at the three, Harrison Barnes at the four, and Marvin Bagley at the five. This is the lineup I think they should have given the bulk of the minutes to after the Barnes acquisition last year. I know it seems like they're pretty committed to Marvin Bagley being a power forward, but to me, his ceiling is at the five. They have high hopes, it seems like, for Harry Giles and that combination specifically, Bagley and Giles. But I think there's a lot more potential for mismatch problems if Bagley's at the five. I like Barnes better at the four than the three, too. That's probably not surprising.
Ditto for Trevor Ariza, by the way.
What's that?
Ditto for Trevor Ariza.
Yeah, for sure. I thought about maybe even switching him into this lineup instead of Barnes. Just a lower volume guy would give more shots to Buddy Hield, Fox, Bogdanovic, and Bagley. There's actually a lot of guys who command fairly high usage in this lineup, so that would probably be the drawback with this group. But this is probably your five best young players, and so I would love to see them on the floor together. And I think this is the natural position for both Barnes and Bagley.
Now, I had this lineup as well, but I peeked at yours after you did it, and I didn't want to have the same lineup. So I tweaked mine, but I support that lineup. I will say, in the 70 possessions it played last year, their net rating was a minus 42.7. 70 possessions, but still.
70 possessions is nothing, yeah.
What I basically did for my lineup, and not basically, this is what I actually did, is that I put Dedmon at the five, moved Bagley to the four, and then pulled Harrison Barnes. So you have Fox, Hield.
That's a good lineup,
Bogdanovic,
too.
Bagley, and Dedmon. It seems that that's a lineup they'll get to. I don't know how they feel about playing Hield and Bogdanovic all at once. And like you said, there might be a volume issue, but Bogdanovic and Hield can both play off the ball. Even Bagley, the way he was shooting on threes, or even catch and shoot looks from inside the arc toward the latter end of the season. And I was really impressed with his defensive motor and recognition as the season went on in the Kings games that I was watching, at least in the half court. And so if you put him and Dedmon together, and you know, Fox is, he's not the best defender at his position, but just he has the physical tools and has the, I would say, close to consistent effort to where he's not going to be overmatched or net minus on many nights. And so you might be able to cobble together a ton of offense in a five out lineup while not being completely terrible on the defensive end.
Yeah. The Kings being in the West kind of bums me out because this is a young roster that I really like. And I just don't think they can make the playoffs in the West. But both of these lineups are super intriguing to me.
The caveat, though, is our four-man combination that both of us have in ours, Bagley, Fox, Bogdanovic, and Buddy Hield, played 289 possessions together last season. We're minus 16.5. And it wasn't – I'll tell you right now, it wasn't the it wasn't good for them on either end of the floor. But that does seem like a path. I like Bagley at the five. And again, my point about his defense was more in support of your lineup. That I think you can eventually get to the point where you can put him at the five.
Yeah, that's my hope for him. But most people know I'm a small ball enthusiast, so we'll see what they do.
Portland Trailblazers, Andy, who you got? Was this one hard? It was hard, right?
Yeah, it was fairly difficult. I kind of started from the premise that I wanted Zach Collins at the five.
Spoiler,
so I have him there.
Ditto.
Then I've got Lillard and McCollum at the one and the two, which is, I'm sure, shocking. And then just to kind of mix it up, I've got Hezonja and Nasir Little at the three and the four. I could have gone with any number of wings here, actually. I think Bazemore and Hood at the three and the four is one that's probably actually going to happen. But I wanted Collins at the five. I kind of want Nasir Little at the four just to kind of see what he gives us. And then, as you know, if there's a Hezonja Island, I may be the mayor of that one as well. I don't know if I'm allowed to pull double duty. But I haven't given up on him yet. So he had that really good stretch with Orlando two seasons ago. I think he had a couple moments with the Knicks last year. It's getting close to time to give up, but I'm not there yet. So mine is Lillard, McCollum, Hezonja, Little, and Collins.
Mine is the same, except I have Bazemore. So Dame, CJ, Bazemore, Hezonja, and Zach Collins. Do you want to hear the lineup I actually wanted to go with, but I wasn't going to leave. This wouldn't be a lineup they'd play with Damian Lillard, and I wasn't going to leave Damian Lillard out of my Blazers lineup. It would be a second unit thing. It's put Hezonja basically at your point guard with Anthony Simons, Kemp Bazemore, Rodney Hood, and Zach Collins. And that's,
I like that one too.
And I do think they're going to have to get creative in that vein because they don't have – I know people are high on Simons, but I've just – from watching him in this past summer league and from the very sparse minutes that you've seen from him in Portland last year, I just don't get the feel that he should be running an entire offense just yet. And mm-hmm. I do think that they're going to need to not just find another playmaker, but probably, you know, 2 to 3 secondary playmakers to slot alongside him to make that most effective. But a lineup that I could actually see them using and would really want to see is have Hezonja at the 4 with Collins at the 5 and then Bazemore, McCollum, Lillard. I don't know what those lineups do defensively. Collins, probably a plus defender at the 5, even though he played more at the 5 last year and they were fine. But Hezonja, I've always thought Bazemore's probably more underrated on offense and then overrated on defense. And then having Lillard and McCollum in the backcourt, you know, that's, you know, that is what it is. They're fantastic offensively. But that lineup would score some points.
For sure. Yeah, I like that one.
Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns are going to hate mine, but you first.
So I know what you did at point guard, and spoiler alert, I support it. But I went with Rubio at the 1, Devin Booker at the 2, Michael Bridges at the 3, Dario Saric at the 4, and DeAndre Ayton at the 5. That's probably just their starting lineup. I guess they could maybe do something different at small forward. But I actually kind of like this lineup. I think Saric is going to have a bounce back season. I think he's a good complement to DeAndre Ayton, somebody who can space the floor a little bit. And I hope they give him some passing responsibility, because that was one of the things that was so intriguing about him before he came to Philadelphia, was his ability to pass. I think Ayton is another guy who might be slightly underrated at this point. I think he had a lot better rookie season than people realize. It was just kind of overshadowed by Doncic and Trae Young.
And it probably shouldn't have been overshadowed so much by Trae Young, if we're being honest.
Yeah. I mean, DeAndre Ayton was pretty steady from beginning to end, and Trae Young's late season push is kind of what made him so popular. Although he came in pretty popular. But anyway, Michael Bridges, good 3-and-D potential. Rubio and Booker is interesting to me, because the Rubio and Donovan Mitchell thing, that, like, they had a pretty good plus net rating when they were together with Utah over the last 2 years. But if you watched those Jazz games, there were so many possessions where defenders just left Ricky Rubio all alone on the outside because they knew he couldn't shoot. And that made things a lot more crowded and difficult for Donovan Mitchell. And I'm curious to see if the same thing happens with Devin Booker. Now, he should be used to that by now. It's basically how he's operated for his entire career. But that particular combination is very interesting to me.
I'd be with you there. I might be over the Ricky Rubio experience, even, you know.
Maybe. Understandable.
He did just win the MVP in the FIBA World Cup.
There's something different about him in international play. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Ricky Rubio hits different in international play. So I know that the Suns, the problem has been that they got players, including Rubio, to alleviate Devin Booker's ball handling responsibilities. I have him at point guard in this lineup anyway, because I still think those are probably combinations that you at least want to sprinkle in, because he is good with the ball in his hands. He should be allowed to experiment more off the ball. And you don't want him to be your point guard a majority of his time on the court. But I have Devin Booker, Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre Jr., and DeAndre Ayton. I wasn't sure what to do with the 4 here. I really wanted to put Saric, but I felt like I couldn't justify it defensively, because right now you only have Bridges as the even to plus defender. He'll be plus. And I think Oubre on certain nights, whether he's going against the 3 or the 4 in this scenario, depending on what Bridges is doing, can come close to even. I wouldn't be opposed if they just said, hey, we're going to lean into all offense and spacing and put Dario Saric with those other 4 guys. That'd be a lineup I'd be very intrigued with seeing. But just having Bridges, who's a pretty good shooter, Cam Johnson, who many people build as the best shooter in the draft, with Booker, and then another wing whether it's Saric or Oubre Jr. with Ayton, that's a lineup that I really get on board with.
I was actually tempted to put Cam Johnson at the four in mine.
They're all interchangeable, I guess, at the 2-3-4 if you're going smaller.
Yeah. His shooting really is I think he has a chance to be a pretty special shooter. I still feel like Phoenix probably reached on that draft pick a little bit, but Phoenix I kind of
definitively reached.
He could be a really, really good shooter. We'll see. Maybe he's just the next Jordan Hamilton. Who knows?
That lineup is sneaky big, by the way. Devin Booker, I believe, is the shortest at 6'5", 6'6", whatever Devin Booker stands at.
Yeah. And I like I just said I'm a small ball enthusiast, but I also like big small ball. Does that make sense?
No, I get what you're saying. And Devin Booker is 6'6". I don't know why I thought that he was 6'5". Is he actually the smallest player in that lineup? Yeah, he is. I always forget that Cam Johnson is 6'9". Doesn't play like he's 6'9". He kind of, on defense anyway, kind of has that Rodney Hood air about him on that side.
For sure.
Yeah. Oklahoma City Thunder.
This is one that's also not surprising. I made one tweak to like the general starting lineup that's been thrown out there. So I've got Chris Paul at the one, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at the two, and then this is where I did a slight deviation. I think most people say Andre Roberson, but I'm going to go with Terrence Ferguson at the three, Danilo Gallinari at the four, and Steven Adams at the five. I think this lineup's been talked about a decent amount, at least the one with Roberson at the three. I think Ferguson gives you a little bit more shooting, and I just – who knows what Andre Roberson is at this point after all the time that he's missed with injuries, unfortunately. I think most people know how I feel about Danilo Gallinari, criminally underrated offensive player. If Chris Paul is on the team for most or all of the season and this lineup stays healthy, Oklahoma City is going to cause people some problems. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but they're going to be very competitive.
Yeah, if he stays and if Robertson's healthy, they're going to be an issue. My lineup, Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Terrence Ferguson. Are you ready to get weird? Andre Roberson, Danilo Gallinari. Just lean into the small. I was originally going to go with having Steven Adams in this with Gallo at the four, which is something I want to see, or even Nerlens Noel with Gallo at the four. But I was looking at it this morning, and I was just like, we're going to see some variation of that lineup eventually if Roberson's healthy. And so let me think more outside the box. And Danilo Gallinari at the five is something I've always been a little bit intrigued by. And if Roberson's a little bit less of a defender following the injuries that he's battled for the last, I guess, year and a half. Now, maybe it's better to have him just match up against some fours. He'll be able to, in theory, guard maybe slower players as opposed to anyone who's really fast or on the ball a ton. And you don't necessarily need him to be on the ball as much when you have Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander there.
Yeah.
So sign me up for Gallo's minutes at the five.
That's a good point. And I think Roberson at the four is smart too. I like that one.
That brings us to this one was tough in a good way. The New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, this is another team that I think there's a bunch of different combinations that to be excited about, and a lot of new players here. I kind of started on this one with I want Zion Williamson at the five, even though I think Derek Favors can and should start there. I hope they do get to some small ball minutes with Zion at the five. So I've got him there. I've got Brandon Ingram at the four, Drew Holiday at the three, JJ Redick at the two, and Lonzo Ball at the one. This lineup has the same concerns that a lot of the presumed starting five ideas have, where there's just not a lot of shooting. And that's the reason I crammed JJ Redick in there. Drew Holiday is obviously a little undersized to play the three, but I think he's done it a little bit over the last few years with New Orleans. He can play big enough to, I think, defend a lot of modern threes. Brandon Ingram is going to be really – Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball are two people that I'm very intrigued by this season, just to see kind of what they look like away from the Los Angeles Lakers, see if they can stay healthy, see if they take sort of a third-year – or I guess it's fourth-year leap for Brandon Ingram, third-year leap for Lonzo Ball. Lots of intriguing young players, but that's – basically, I wanted to get a lineup with Zion at the five, so that's where I went.
I started in the exact same fashion. I said, I want Zion at the five, and so Zion is at the five. And our lineups are actually pretty close. I don't have Lonzo in there. And I have Nikhil Alexander-Walker. You know I always find a player to cape for ahead of the draft, And that shouldn't mean anything to anyone because, one, one of those players was Frank Ntilikina during his draft. Another one of those players, though, was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he turned out all right. But I cram for the draft, aside from what I, you know, happened to see in small doses during the regular season. I'm cramming like 6 weeks out or 4 weeks out. But he was just someone whose game I fell in love with. And then what he did in summer league with the ball in his hands at times sold me. And so I kind of like the idea of, you know, is this lineup going to have enough playmaking? Let's give Zion a chance to really handle the ball in the half court.
Yeah.
And so if you go with Jrue Holiday, J.J. Redick, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson, I think that, yes, you want Ingram to have the ball in his hands, but you, there's also going to be opportunity for Walker to get some reps there as well as Zion. And then Jrue Holiday, he can also play with the ball. J.J. Redick ran pick and roll a ton in Philadelphia. So I like that lineup, and it seems to have a nice blend of spacing and ball handling. And I do think there's a ton of defensive potential there. It really kind of depends on how Brandon Ingram defensively does at the four. And there were times where he held up the Lakers. So just a combination I want to see.
Dig it. That brings us to Memphis, right? Yeah, I did skip somebody. Minnesota. I have Jeff Teague at point. I was trying to find some other point guard for this lineup.
Don't worry, so you're good.
What's that?
Don't worry, I did, so you're good.
Okay. So I got Teague. I got Jarrett Culver at the two. See what he can do. Andrew Wiggins at the three. I was doing the NBA math crystal basketball thing last night. So for those of you who don't know, Adam Frommel, who runs NBA Math, does this project every summer called Crystal Basketball, where we rate every player in the league on a scale of 1 to 12, and then he averages them together. I found myself tempted to, like, predict an Andrew Wiggins breakout in that. Is this a safe place to say that?
That'll do it for Hardwood Knox. We'll
Oh, my gosh. Why can't I give up on Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker? But anyway, I feel like Wiggins might be kind of decent this year. I'm really curious to see what he looks like full season with Ryan Saunders. Anyway, Covington at the four. I think it's pretty well documented that the minutes that Minnesota played with Covington on the floor last year were pretty dang good. I think he's a really good complement to Karl Anthony Towns, who's obviously my five. So this one's not that surprising. This could even be another option that ends up being a starting lineup at some point.
I'll start mine by saying, if anyone's hearing a ton of noise, there are just landscapers near where I'm recording, so hopefully they'll be done soon, but we're powering through anyway. I do not have Andrew Wiggins in my lineup. That should be a non-spoiler for anyone who knows my thoughts on Andrew Wiggins. My lineup is Shabazz Napier. There you go. You're welcome. Jarrett Culver, Robert Covington, Noah Vonleh, and Karl Anthony Towns. It's not a small ball lineup, but both of your bigs can shoot threes, and you might end up having two defensive players who are going to be super effective on the wings in Culver and Covington. Mm-hmm. And I don't know defensively if you run into issues with Vonleh and Towns, but Towns seem to play better in more of a team-oriented scheme when after the Jimmy Butler trade, before all the spate of injuries hit Minnesota. I am very tempted. I like the idea of having, you know, maybe you throw Andrew Wiggins in here, make it similar to your lineup, and so you're dealing with three wings at the 2-3-4. I'm just out on Wiggins, and I really liked what Vonleh was able to do with the Knicks last year, and the Bell Towns front court intrigues me, but the Vonleh Towns one intrigues me even more because I think that's more of both an outside-in combination where both players can play either inside-out or, again, from above the break in.
Bell Towns really intrigues me too. I'm sure we'll see a decent amount of that this season. Jordan Bell's a guy that I'm sort of sneakily high on. I don't even know if it's sneaky, but anyway.
Memphis Grizzlies, who you got?
Okay, this is the one where I have kind of a random name thrown in there. So I'm going to start from the other end of the lineup. Jaren Jackson at the five, no surprise there. Brandon Clark at the four, really. Curious to see what that front court looks like, even though they're probably going to start games with Jackson at the four and Valanciunas at the five. I think their long-term starting front court is Clark and Jackson. Then at the three, I have Kyle Anderson. He doesn't know it, but he's a friend of the pod.
Or does he know it? He listens. Come on.
Maybe he does. Yeah. I like Kyle Anderson a lot better at the four. But I wanted Brandon Clarke in there, and I wanted Kyle Anderson in there, and that's just kind of the way I have to do it. Ja Morant at the one. So if you noticed, I skipped a position because it's John Conchar at the two.
He's coming, and I still wasn't prepared for it.
He's on a two-way contract right now, so who knows if he even like plays any time for the big club this season. But he has such a interesting, fascinating college statistical profile. I want to see what he looks like in the NBA. Listen to his numbers as a senior: 20 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block. A 6'5 guard. And I don't have his summer league stats pulled up, but if I recall, that's kind of how, I mean, he didn't score a lot in summer league, but he did like everything else. Assists, steals, blocks. Like a 6'5 guy getting blocks is super intriguing to me. So here's his summer league stats. I found them. Let's get to the per game. 5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block.
It's very Joakim Noah-esque.
Yeah, the 6'5 white Joakim Noah. So in a lineup with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson, and even Brandon Clark's really good around the rim, so you presumably have a decent amount of scoring, at least like maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, then a guy like John Conchar could be sort of your defensive specialist. This is probably far more John Conchar content than any of the listeners anticipated, but that's my two for the Memphis Grizzlies.
So I like you, prefer Kyle Anderson at the four, which is why he's not a member of my lineup. I really wanted Brandon Clarke and Jaren Jackson Jr. as the 4 and 5. I rounded that out with Ja Morant, Josh Jackson, and Jay Crowder. I said, let's just see what that lineup would be capable of defensively. Josh Jackson is still a mess, probably at both ends of the floor, but at least just has the size and the lateral movement to be pesky, frisky on the defensive end. And so you pair him with Jay Crowder, who I also prefer at the four. And then Ja Morant, I don't really know who else you want to see at point guard. You know, I don't need to see Tyus Jones at the point guard for them. Maybe Dylan Brooks, De'Anthony Melton, probably not. One thing I didn't put, Andre Iguodala would be a member of these lineups if I thought that he was going to play a minute for the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know whether he'll get traded or bought out before the season, but I don't anticipate him playing for Memphis.
That's where I came down on the Iguodala thing, too. Though Grizzlies, now that you have laid out your lineup, they can play like a 4 power forward lineup.
I guess they
kind of are with you, but they've got you could go Jackson, Clark, Crowder, and Anderson all on the floor at the same time and like kind of get away with it, I feel like.
RIP floor spacing in that one.
Yeah.
Josh Jackson and Anderson at the same time. That's wolf.
You don't have to worry about Jay Crowder taking him though. He will certainly get his shots up.
I guess more sensibly, because of what Kyle Anderson could do as a playmaker, it just makes sense to bounce Josh Jackson and be, you know, Kyle Anderson, Jay Crowder, you guys are the two and the three and you'll figure it out. That's probably the smarter decision. I've not fully given up on Josh Jackson, though.
So Josh Jackson is to Dan as Andrew Wiggins is to me.
No, in your defense, Andrew you've Wiggins got more has time. A half-decade sample size of sucking.
I was going to say, it's been a lot less time with Josh Jackson, but my goodness, his numbers are alarming.
Yes, we went over those when we did our Phoenix Suns pod. They're rough stuff. And then he always gives you like a little bit of hope towards the end of the season, but it never proves sustainable. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I dislocated my shoulder just a few months ago. After it popped back in, rather than seeking immediate medical attention, I just wanted to continue about my daily life, deal with the pain, and hope that it would eventually get better without really doing anything to rest it or make sure that it gave me proper range of motion. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free two-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to get connected to a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/BlueWire for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/BlueWire. The Lakers, Andy, who do you have for them?
I have, so I started with this one from the premise that I want the LeBron James Anthony Davis front court, even though I do think it's cool that they're coming out and saying straight up that LeBron's a one for them. I've got Davis at the five, which is where he should be playing, as most listeners know. LeBron James at the four, Danny Green at the three, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at the two, and folk hero Alex Caruso at the one.
Did you see that he got drug tested after that Photoshop picture of him circulated on Twitter?
Yeah, that was hilarious. Yeah. So probably one that we might actually see from the Lakers this season. I think people are a little harder on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope than he deserves. Yes. I think, you know, in a lineup with LeBron and Anthony Davis in the front court, I think he could actually be pretty effective. That's two really good wing defenders in those two guys. Decent amount of shooting with Caruso, KCP, and Green. Even LeBron has obviously had some years where he was a good shooter. So there's a lot to like with this particular group. And I just wanted to keep Rondo off the floor.
Same here, which is why I went with KCP, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis needs to be at the five. The LeBron James, Anthony Davis 4-5 combination, I think, is something that is just going to steamroll defenses. And yeah. I hope if the Lakers really aren't married to it in the majority, I really hope that they make it a staple in crunch time. I'm taking a risk there with Avery Bradley, and you don't have then a traditional point guard. But again, if LeBron's going to be your point anyway, KCP can run some stuff, and then hopefully Bradley's shooting can improve because he's around Danny Green, LeBron, even Davis's roll gravity. That's a lineup I could see them playing. I don't know if they'll actually get to it. The Anthony Davis at the five is that those are big question marks. Even LeBron James at the four. I wanted to keep Rondo off the floor, and Kuzma just doesn't intrigue me enough to be like, hey, yeah, play him, LeBron, and Anthony Davis together and make that the lineup that you just really want to see all the time.
They're going to start LeBron, Green, Kuzma, Davis, and McGee.
Are they going to start LeBron at the one? Is that like, I know that came out, but is that like guaranteed?
That's just my guess at this point. That's the lineup they go with, because they sure seem to be committed to Kuzma. And I guess I kind of get it, but I'm like you. He's not super intriguing.
Yeah, LeBron will be
to me.
Trying to trade him by December. So
I'm sure you're right about that.
The Clippers. What's your lineup for them?
Okay, this is one that's probably not surprising. This one will probably see some time. Patrick Beverley at the one, Landry Shamet at the two, Paul George at the three, Kawhi Leonard at the four, and Montrezl Harrell at the five. I don't think this one needs a ton of explanation either. I think this is one that they'll definitely go to from time to time, maybe even start games with it. Although they'll probably bring Harrell off the bench still.
Yeah. So my lineup is exactly the same, except I have Jermichael Green at the five, just absolutely huge for them at the five in the Warrior series, but Beverley, Shamet, Leonard, George, and Jermichael Green. I would assume that lineup gets a bunch of minutes. I'm not really sure though. If we wanted to be a little bit more creative, I'm not a fan of taking Patrick Beverley off the floor, but if you wanted to just say, hey, Landry Shamet is actually going to be a point guard, throw Mo Harkless in there then and take Patrick Beverley out just for the size. I'd be there. You could even do it with Rodney Magruder. That's not really giving you size, but pull Beverley, have Shamet be your de facto one, and put Mo Harkless in there, assuming you don't trade him for Iggy. If you do trade him for Iggy, even better. Throw Iguodala in there. That'd be something I'd want to see as well. That's self-explanatory. There are just so many good combinations to build with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. This team is just so deep and so dangerous. And they're probably, if you just went top to bottom, like let's build a bunch of different lineups, they might be the most entertaining team just looking at the sheer number of potentially effective combinations that you could come up with.
Yeah. The fact that they'll start games with George and Leonard and still have the like Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell 1-2 punch off the bench is
just in their back pocket.
That in itself is just wild. They're going to be so good.
The Houston Rockets, Andy.
Okay, most of this one is pretty cookie cutter. I went off the rails at the five, so I'll start at the one this time. Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon at the two, James Harden at the three, PJ Tucker at the four, and brace yourself, Anthony Bennett at the five.
Ooh.
I'm another high draft pick that I refuse to give up on.
So you're predicting all-star appearances for both Bennett and Wiggins this season. Got it.
Bennett, Jabari Wiggins, Jabari Parker, Dante Exum. Who else can I throw in there? Very, very high on all these.
Apparently John Conchar, too. Might as well.
Yeah, John Conchar. Throw him into whatever weird predictions I want to make. Anthony Bennett is like a stretch four off the bench in the G League or whatever his role was fun to watch. That highlight reel that kind of surfaced towards the end of last season was interesting. I hope he is in shape and he can play that sort of stretch role. This is a lineup that has four shooters. I'm not going to throw Westbrook in there, but four shooters around Westbrook. I think one through four is pretty self-explanatory here. And then I just got kind of weird with my fifth one.
You say there's four shooters around Westbrook, so we're counting Anthony Bennett as a shooter now?
Yes.
Okay.
I already told you I'm in on Anthony Bennett.
That is also not a take I expected to hear. Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon, James Harden, Daniel House, and PJ Tucker is mine. I would say a little short of cookie cutter just because they didn't play PJ Tucker a ton at the five last year. But if you're going to play Gordon, Harden, and Westbrook together for stretches, which you are, you might as well just get a little weird up front and go smaller and try and milk the versatility.
You ready for Anthony Bennett's three-point numbers in the esteemed G League?
I heard you furiously typing away over there, so I am ready.
2017-18, he was 90 for 213 for 42.3%, and last year he was 53 of 117 for 45.3%. I am predicting that Anthony Davis makes the roster for the Rockets and shoots 34%.
Anthony Davis or Anthony Bennett? Pretty bold trade prediction.
Yeah. I'm now also predicting that the Rockets trade Anthony Bennett for Anthony Davis, and I have completely lost my mind.
What do you think a compromise for us would be? What if you pull Eric Gordon and then put Anthony Bennett at the five with Tucker, House, Harden, and Westbrook? I might even be, you know,
that's interesting too. Yeah.
Pull Westbrook, keep Gordon and Harden just to preserve the floor spacing a little bit more. Cause you're going to stagger Westbrook and Harden anyway.
That's true. Yeah. Before I put Anthony Bennett at the one, let's go to the Warriors.
Here for it.
Stephen Curry, D'Angelo Russell, Alec Burks at the three, Klay Thompson at the four, and Draymond Green at the five. I was trying to decipher what their death lineup is going to be now, because over the last 5 years or however long this dynasty has been going on, they've always had some form or another of the death lineup. So I started with Green at the five and just tried to build out the rest of the lineup. I guess in Alec Burke's spot, you could go with like Alphonso McKinney, or maybe one of their other younger wings, but this is my attempt at finding this season's death lineup.
Would you care to predict an all-star appearance for Jordan Poole while we're here, or?
No, I would not.
I really like that lineup. I went more cookie cutter because I'm just so intrigued to see this lineup. It's the four mainstays: Steph Curry, Clay, Draymond, and Kevon Looney with D'Angelo Russell. And we're not going to get to see it until February. I really like yours though. For a second, I thought about trying to find what their death lineup would look like. But if you have Thompson as your four with Green, and then, like you said, you could go with Burks, McKinney, maybe even Jordan Poole, depending on how you feel about him, and Russell and Curry, I want to see that. I like your lineup. Your lineup's officially my favorite. But the lineup that I think is going to be their starting lineup, or at least their most used lineup, once Clay returns, and assuming they don't trade D'Angelo Russell this year, that lineup has a ton of offensive versatility, obviously, but I'd be curious to see how it holds up defensively when Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell are your backcourt.
Yeah, that's going to be a big question. I just want to see Stephen Curry shoot it 25 times a game this year.
Did you see that he basically said, I'm going to unload the clip and shoot 22 threes on opening night?
I did see that.
Swole and troll.
I hope he sticks to it, because that's...
Steve Kerr would have a coronary.
If we can get anything close to 2015-16 Curry, I'm all for it, and I think the Warriors will be better than people expect.
I'm just concerned because they have to run more pick and roll now that D'Angelo Russell is there, so I'm just picturing Steph being placed in the corner around Willie Cauley-Stein, D'Angelo Russell pick and rolls.
If they're like, think about the ultimate floor spacer, though. I mean, they have the freedom to run pick and roll against the most basic defense possible because of him. There's no way you can help off him to a pick and roll. So they have to run
a ton more pick and roll now, right? You don't,
and they should run it not just with Russell but with Curry too.
And Draymond Green, that was the most unstoppable play in basketball before the Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry pick and roll. That was
bring it back. The recent the Durant stuff about how the motion offense doesn't work was interesting too. But maybe that's a topic for another podcast.
We have two teams left. The Denver Nuggets, who you got?
So you and I talked about this yesterday. It's kind of hard to not just go with Denver starting five. And I guess the intrigue there is who starts at the three. Like, can they figure out some way to get Michael Porter minutes at the three? But instead of just going with the basic at least four or five of their starters, I tried to go with an all-bench mob for this one. And so I've got Monty Morris at the one, Malik Beasley at the two, Michael Porter at the three, Juan Hernan Gomez at the four, and then Jeremy Grant at the five. I know there's a lot of talk about playing Grant at the three this season, but I'm more intrigued to see whether they can get him some minutes at the five. Because I think if he's your small ball five, you've just unlocked all kinds of matchup problems. You can play super fast. I think you can protect the rim a little bit. Morris and Beasley were both excellent last season. Two of the best bench guards in the league in my mind. And then I'm still not out on Hernan Gomez. And obviously Michael Porter is super intriguing. I mean, he came into the draft or that freshman season at Missouri is like a potential number one pick and really haven't seen him at all since he went to Missouri. So he's very intriguing for sure.
They could go, if he's healthy, I didn't put him in mind just because I don't know what to expect from him this year or how often they would feasibly play him, but they could go super big with like Porter, Grant, Millsap, and Jokic on the court at the same time with Jamal Murray.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting too.
My lineup was, I also pulled Nikola Jokic. It's no offense against Jokic. It's just, they're just more tantalizing combinations for me without him. Not more effective, but you know what's going to happen with Jokic on the floor and how you need to build out the lineups from there. I viewed it from the standpoint of, if Jamal Murray is going to be your number one option, what would be just the ultimate lineup where it could work on offense, but you're not going to hemorrhage points on defense? So I have him, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Jeremy Grant, and Paul Millsap is then at the five.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah. Jeremy Grant at the five, though, is definitely something I'd like to see them get to. I just don't know without Michael Porter, if you have Michael Porter Jr., or if you don't have him, rather, I don't know how you build out those lineups with him at the five. Do you have the wing power? Are you looking at, you know, Harris, Beasley, and Barton with Murray when Grant's at the five? Or is it, or do you want to put Monte Morris or Murray? Are you playing Torrey Craig? You mentioned Juan Hernan Gomez. Michael Porter Jr., I think, being healthy and capable and on the floor, is going to be paramount to Denver probably experimenting with Jeremy Grant at the five at all.
I just thought, just came into my head, Michael Porter at the five too. Let's see that at some point.
Do it. Here for it. He's 6'9".
Dallas Mavericks. I started this one from the premise of the 4-5 combination being Luka and Porzingis. I think you're on the same page as me thinking that Porzingis' best position is the five. So that's kind of where I started there. Porzingis at the five, Doncic at the four, Dorian Finney-Smith at the three, Seth Curry at the two, and DeLon Wright at the one. This one's probably not that shocking either, although I'm not sure how often they can get to it because they've got Maxi Kleba, Dwight Powell, and Boban. I think even Boban might play like 10 minutes a game for them. So it might be difficult to get extended minutes with Doncic and Porzingis at the four and the five, but I think that's probably their most talented and most versatile front court.
I didn't realize we had the same in this one. I have the exact same lineup. If we wanted to go a little bit off the rails, you could definitely put Jalen Brunson in here. He's someone I like instead of maybe Seth Curry or DeLon Wright. If you were going for someone who's a little bit more of a ball handler. Still, that's the five-man lineup I want to see. Very rough look for Kleba, Boban, and Dwight Powell, because I don't think that the Mavericks necessarily intend on playing Porzingis as the de facto five, or he's at least going to be part of many dual big lineups. But I'm with you. I want to see the Doncic-Porzingis 4-5 combination. Look, Doncic is in the lineup that both of us built. He's effectively the point guard still.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a prime, but that's the lineup I want to see most. And look, I'm going to be honest. I think you're higher on Dallas than I am. I know a few people are higher on them. I'm not crazy about this roster just yet. They have a lot of solid pieces, but when just building out lineups, I'm not over the moon about this roster.
I think it's mostly just like a vote of confidence in Luka. Because if you do look at it top to bottom, there are some worries that I think are justified that you're bringing up now. That does it for the entire Western Conference lineups that we are intrigued by, fascinated by, would play if we were the coach of these teams. If you want to call us wild about any of them, you can find Dan on Twitter at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. At Blue Wire Pods is the podcast network. And as always, we invite you to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that already. And if you have, we implore you to share it with your friends and family. And until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Beno Udrih, Kyle Anderson, and Jalen Brunson. I almost said Trey Burke there, but I caught myself.
Oh, God, no.